And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this evening, I am blessed to have Isha Lerner here today. Isha is the creator and author of the Inner Child Cards and Workbook. Isha has been working with astrology, tarot, and the healing arts since the early 70s. Wow. She's a therapist who weaves astrology, tarot, fairy tales, and flower essence therapy into her life and practice. And she has two other deck sets, the Triple Goddess Tarot and the Power of Flowers. This is probably one of the only interviews this year where I actually sought Isha out because I had done a reading on tarot.com and I just loved the way it was done so positively. And I found it very unique and interesting. So welcome, Isha.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your personal journey and how you started, or what sort of brought you here?
Well, you know, the tarot is such a rich fabric of archetype. And it was really very early in my life that I, like many of us who are early kind of spiritual pilgrims on the path from the 70s, very interested in Carl Jung's work and, all the great work that was available through the teachings of Krishnamurti and the sort of the early teachers. And I've always been a very visual person and found the tarot to be a rich, as I say, fabric of imagery and meaning that dated back not only to an ancestral kind of primal form, but also could be miraculously updated as cultures advanced and pictures could be recreated, but always carrying, you know, these very powerful archetypal themes that live within each human being. And so really early in my early 20s, I was very drawn to the tarot as a tool and connected that in with my astrology practice. And, of course, flower essences came into my awareness in the late 70s when I lived at the Fintorn Foundation in Scotland. Mm. And some may know of that community. And worked with the Bach remedies and then began to expand the repertoire there, developing the Power of Flower book deck set, again, combining flowers and the healing essences of flowers with archetype and image, and eventually creating my own flower essence company called the Power of Flower Healing Essences. And then, of course, coming back to the Inner Child cards, finding my way into the expression of my own, you might say, cultural paradigms and values, and finding the great pleasure in creating tarot decks that could represent that progression of cultural understanding.
Right, and you know, your deck really goes into fairy tales, and I find it extraordinarily positive, and the way you did it, it's a very unique approach. So I'd really like to talk about, I guess, the difference between, and I think you call it, you know, the journey of transformation, and it's the soul's journey, and a lot of the other tarot call it the fool's journey. But they're very interestingly linked, and so let's go through, you know, starting at the beginning with the major arcana, you know, the fool. And in your case, it's called the Little Red Cap.
Right. Yeah, to preface that, what you said is just so perfect, and I just wanted to reiterate that fact that fairy tale mysticism and the spiritual lore of storytelling is, of course, equally ancient and preserved, of course, through antiquity. And what was so magical and exciting to find was that the journey of the fool, or, quote, orphan, through the royal Road to Wisdom of the Major Arcana was a perfect mirror of the fairy tale heroine and hero who also walk the path through many initiations and life experiences, moving, of course, the orphan through the vagaries, you might say, of life and the initiations up toward the process of individuation, genius, and ultimately fulfilled destiny. And so from the Fool to the World card, we see the progression of human initiation, and we see that progression in every fairy tale. And there's a central theme in every fairy tale that that works with the characteristic of enchantment and the experience of breaking a myth and beginning a new life and, in a sense, overcoming the shadow. And that, again, is so beautifully portrayed through the journey of the Fool to the World card in the Major Arcana. So, yeah, it'd be fun to look at a couple of the cards and to see how, in a sense, the fairy tale themselves were mystical teachings. And, of course, it was the consciousness of the fairy tale storyteller relaying the story to the listener, usually at night by candlelight, that opened the portal to the dream world so that transformation could take place through sleep and dream. And so it, again, connects us back to the tarot reader being, in a sense, that storyteller and working, in a sense, with the initiate as a means to awaken, inspire, and, of course, ultimately enlighten one to their highest potential and treasure, represented by the castle in fairy tales. And in our own human life, it would be, of course, the experience of unconditional love for self. So do you want to look through a couple cards?
Sure.
See the correlation?
Yeah.
So the Zero Fool card, as you mentioned, is connected to Little Red Cap, or Little Red Riding Hood, as more commonly known. And in researching the fairy tales, I reached back as far as I could to as original writings as possible, and of course extensive work with the Grimm brothers' work and the stories that were written from oral tradition. Disney, of course, took some of the storylines and created new imagery and even some new archetypes and added them to the fairy tales. And those now live also within the heart of humanity. Little Red Cap is one such fable that has gone through many, many storylines and reaches, of course, many fairy tales reach back as far, of course, Prussia and Russia and Eastern Germany and then came forward west. And then by the time they became, in a sense, settled into our Western mentality, much of the story was a little bit, was quite different. But Little Red Cap is one of the few fairy tale figures who was not orphaned. And this is one of the interesting things in that, the again, the fairy tale protagonist is often orphaned, motherless or fatherless, on a personal journey, severed, you might say, from the safety of the mother matrix that overlights and protects, as a means to urge and push them, encourage them to find their own path. But Little Red Cap, she has a mother there at the door, and she has a grandmother waiting for her at the other end of the trail. And the mother, very particular line in the original Little Red Cap story says, "And do not stray the path." So the Fool card connected to this shows that connection to that line, that we have to stray the path, we have to jump off the precipice as a means to find the new awareness, you know, the new life that awaits us. And so Little Red Cap, of course, is tempted, and she's, of course, seduced in a sense by the beautiful flowers in the meadow, and she veers the path, as we all do, at one point or another in our life as a means to growth, and of course encounters the big bad wolf, which represents the shadow side, and her own internal means that she must find to outwit the shadow and find, again, the wisdom and the strength of her own individuation. In the Fool card of the traditional Tarot, we see that, of course, the little dog nipping at the heels of the being that's about to walk off the cliff represents the primal kind of urge, the primal call of caution, just like the mother, you know, saying, do not stray the path. And yet, of course, we know that when we reach a point or a stage of our growth and initiation, we must walk off the precipice. We must take that leap of faith and move into the next adventure of our life. And so, again, Little Red Cap seemed a perfect match to the Fool card, and was a wonderful and very fun archetype to work with.
Now,
do you have any questions or any thoughts on that yourself?
Well, what I was going to say is if you actually looked to the real fairy tales from the beginning, which sounds like you did, and the stories are quite different, as you said, from what Disney portrays. And
Right. The
stories are usually quite a bit darker as well.
Yes, and you know, the darkness of the stories were really not meant to terrorize or to horrify. They were very, very gruesome representations of the shadow aspect and that part of ourself that can gobble ourselves up, or in a sense be gobbled up by outside power and authority. So there's oftentimes that process of overcoming evil. And of course, that's a common theme in every movie anyway, even, you know, in our current psyche and movies made today,
for sure.
Cartoons. But in the fairy tale, there's a potential for the protagonist to overcome this evil or to overcome this force of power. Very interesting to note, in fairy tales, you often will see the theme of number three, the number three repeated over and over again, which is the magical number of
the Trinity.
Finding joy, and it's basically the number of the goddess, the number of the feminine.
Uh-huh.
And fairy tales, at their very core, are feminine by nature, in the sense that they're moist teachings. You know, bring a fertile ground into the soul to do the work of awakening. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see, you know, three brothers, three teachers, three lessons, you know, three something as a means to initiate, is the number of initiation. And this I bring this forward because of that, that potential to overcome evil and to work through the dark side. We're given an opportunity through the story and being one with the story to have three tries or three ways that we might overcome. And when we do, usually it's the third try, we hit that stage, as I mentioned earlier, in the fairy tale or in our life, when we are enchanted. Mm-hmm. And it's that enchanted moment when an old myth is broken and a new myth begins, and something magical happens, like a prince, a frog turns back into a prince, or Sleeping Beauty is able to cough, or rather Snow White is able to cough the apple out of her own throat. It's usually the action of one's own will that pushes us toward the breaking of an old myth and the beginning of a new. So we see this in, again, the major arcana, and we see it in all fairy tale lore.
Right. So, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so we did the Fool, which is the Little Red Cap, and talking about the dark side and the three. I mean, you have the Judgment card as the three little pigs, but you have the Devil card as the Big Bad Wolf, which the Big Bad Wolf kind of fits in both the three little pigs, and it fits in with the Little Red Cap, and it's an interesting shadow side.
I love that you bring that up, because it's true. The wolf is represented in a lot of fairy tales as a figure, of course, of trickery and cunning, and must be overcome. And the wolf will often be boiled, go down a chimney, be boiled in a pot of hot water. In the traditional Little Red Cap story, Little Red Cap is tricked by the wolf three times, but the third time she outsmarts the big bad wolf, and of course he ends up in a big boiling sort of cauldron of sausage and water. And the three little pigs, there again we have the wolf coming down the chimney, and it's all about transformation. You know, it's all about that that process of transforming the shadow into the light and changing. Of course, it's from ashes, and the resurrection aspect of the soul's will to move toward light. So yeah, the wolf is a very common theme, and we see the this kind of cunning trickery also in the Emperor's New Clothes story as well. There's often this sort of cunning little outsmarting kind of energy that eventually must be overcome so that we can regain our highest spiritual intellect and our ability to find our way to truth. Hmm. Another card that's fun to look at is Aladdin and the Magic Lamp.
I was going to ask you about that.
Mercury card, the magician card in traditional tarot. And that's kind of a nice connection too there, in that the magician card, of course, follows the one. It's the one card, follows the fool, zero. And here we have our first attempt to visualize through the mercurial energy, and the mental, the mind, to visualize the form of new life. And we start to sort of gather the tools represented by the four suits on the table of the magician, or on the rug here on the Aladdin and the magic lamp card. And so we know that we're brought to Earth, and we have the tools of life to work with, but we know the old adage, be careful what you wish for, and use, your mental prowess in such a way as to build the vision carefully before the manifestation takes place. So essentially in this card, the magic lamp is a symbol of our illumined mind, our illumined mind is overlighted by a great genie, which of course is our high self, and it represents the powers, of the spiritual world and the genius potential in every human being. It's kind of nice to learn that the word genius comes from Latin and literally means to be inhabited by a genie. And so the magic lamp also suggests the awakening power of our imagination and our genius. So again, this is very much what the magician card is hoping for us. When we receive that archetype, we're met with a field of potential that our mind is ready to become a genie, so to speak, and create the imaginative fabric of new potentials of form that are yet to be manifested.
Right. A card I always have a difficulty with is the Hierophant, and you've put that as the wizard, which I think is a very interesting way of putting it.
Right. It's funny that there are cards that there are common cards that people have a difficult time with, and the Hierophant is one of them, and another one is the Temperance card.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that people will see that card, they'll grapple with it in the classes that I teach. They'll commonly, share that same, that same feeling about those two cards. So the Hierophant, one thing that people forget about the Tarot is that there is a journey from 0 to 21, mm-hmm. and there is a journey that progresses. So we must look at the card that that follows and the card that's behind each right. card to understand its full potential. And so with the Hierophant, we have the Emperor behind, and we have the Lovers ahead because it's the number 5 card. And what's beautiful to note is that there are pairings in the Tarot. The Empress and the Emperor are a pair. And then we have the Hierophant. The Hierophant is ultimately a symbol, a representation of our need as an individual or as a humanity to bridge the material world represented by the Emperor with the spiritual world represented by the Pope in traditional Tarot, or the Popus, who came before the Pope in early decks, so seen as a female figure. And what we're seeing is also a merging of what one might call state and church. So the Hierophant shows the kind of spiritual authority that matches and aligns with the Emperor, which would be the material authority, who, when in positive form, when functioning well, is equally merged with the Empress. The Empress being the, and remember, these are basically non-gender. On an archetypal level, they're gender, but they're energy fields that every human being carries within themselves.
Right.
And so the Empress would be the love factor and the creative factor, and the Emperor would be taking that love and creative harmonic and funneling that energy into the vessel of form, mm-hmm. and creating, you might say, the abundant world or the abundant field of the castle. Once that has been established, then we must move to the spiritual world to merge that physical manifestation with the world of a greater heavenly heavenly unity. And there then we bridge the ultimate factor of the Empress and the Emperor into the Lover's card, where you have the alchemical marriage, so that the material marriage has become a spiritual phenomenon. So the Hierophant being the wizard, we looked at Gandalf and the Lord of the Rings as a very good representation of bringing that essence of goodwill forward as a kind of non-dogmatic. You know, in traditional Tarot, you have the Pope, you have a connotation with Christianity in a lot of the cards as well, because of the culture that many of the cards were preserved out of. And so, you know, we move away from that connotation, which many, many decks have done, and we move it to the whimsical story of the Lord of the Rings to see that we must unite in a greater spiritual ring of respect and peace and unity in order to progress and truly know the virtue of love, which in the inner child cards, the Lover's card becomes Hansel and Gretel, which is in itself an hour story in itself. It's a tremendous connection of the inner dynamic workings of the anima and the animus. The story of longing for home and love, and the evil temptations and the hunger that is associated with love in our culture and associated with Hansel and Gretel's story. Represented by the candy cottage and the hunger and the missing mother, and then inside this beautiful candy cottage is this, you know, the wicked enchantress who wants to gobble the children up, and they have to find their way back to their unified, you might say, goal, to find their way back home. So, yeah, it's fun to talk about the cards. Ask me questions. Yeah. I know I can go on and on.
I think it's great because I Again, I love that they're so positive and they're so unique. I mean, it's a very interesting thing because I think a lot of people don't know the true underlying meanings of a lot of the fairy tales, and I don't think they connect how deeply spiritual and divine these cards can become, and the mirror and the guide that it can offer us is, you know, very profound.
Right, right. And, you know, you bring up a very good point about them being positive. It was our goal in creating the cards to put a deck in the hands of both children and adults alike. Not as a sugar-coated candy deck that wouldn't have real meaning associated with it, and certainly not to erase or negate the power of the shadow, you know, or the power of deeper meaning that traditional tarot holds, but as a means of bringing forward, again, another face of the tarot through the fairy tale imagery that would somehow, again, serve as soul teachings without the fear and the connotation that our culture has placed upon tarot.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tarot in itself, of course, is always beautiful, and many of the images in traditional cards that people fear, such as the Ten of Swords with the man laying on his back with ten swords, you know, in his back, or various cards that seem a little bit harsh or frightening for especially the newcomer to tarot.
Yeah.
And the way that tarot is depicted, of course, in our sort of Christian centered world,
mm-hmm.
and of course pigeonholed as a tool of witchery or the devil or gypsy, or, you know, it's just been so sadly misrepresented. And so when you study it deeply and you love it deeply and you understand its history and its roots and its integrity, you long to find a way to put it in the hands of a humanity
mm-hmm.
that can love it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so our joy in finding that connection between the big bad wolf and the devil was just pure delight for us. Because certainly, even in the rhyme, who's afraid of the big bad wolf, you know, it's like we know we're afraid of the big bad wolf in the fairy tale, and we're afraid of the devil in a sense, but we overcome the big bad wolf in fairy tales, you know, and we find that we grow and we become ever stronger to the very fact that we had to encounter the wolf in the first place and find the wits within our soul and the will to overcome the force of its, whatever we might call it, you know, destruction or fear or limitation.
Right.
So it's, you know, this was so exciting for us in creating the cards, was finding these cards such as Sleeping Beauty to replace the Death card.
Right, which is very clever.
It's a theme of dream and sleep and the whole process of transformation. It, just the very fact that it's 13 card and there are 13 fairies in Snow White, in the story of Sleeping Beauty, and how it was the 13th fairy that broke the spell. And, you know, all these beautiful little connotations and beautiful connections that we found that were like magical stars, you know, falling from the sky that lit words on a page and allowed us to learn more about the divine journey of the human soul as seen through a fairy tale that very few people are really aware of.
Yeah. Okay, I have to ask about the hermit, because the hermit to me is always, you know, the one who's on the mountaintop that shines his light and usually guides and helps somebody to become the hero, to become, you know, their own teacher and to extend them into a different place. And you have it as Snow White, and I'm sure you have the exact same meaning because everything else has seemed to come the same way, but I'm really curious.
Right, sure. With like you say, with the hermit, yes, that we reach that point on the journey on the royal road where the number 9 numerologically is completion, and that there is a process that one must reflect, of course, and find a deeper level of service within themselves that is emerging, and then eventually moves them into the Wheel of Fortune, where life begins a whole new phase of outer search and outer manifestations. And so in the hermit association with Snow White, here she is, you know, cast out into the forest. The story, obviously, she is as are all fairy tale heroines, a representation of the stage of transformation and individuation that is this imminent for her. She's going to be cast away, or she's going to have to find her own way. But in Snow White, she finds herself in a little tiny cottage in the woods, which in a way is like the hermit cave.
Oh, yes.
And we know that the hermit gestates in the cave as a means to become internalized with a greater light of wisdom that will grow within them, represented by the lamp that they walk out of the cave with, carrying, bringing this light of wisdom to the world, lighting the way to others. Well, in Snow White, her first job in the little cottage in the forest is to serve. And, of course, the hermit, it's the Virgo card, which, again, connects us to a movement toward a greater service. So as part of her initiation is to glean and to discover her... Are you there?
Yes.
Sorry.
No, that way.
Oh, that's okay. Her own inner light through service. And so she's, of course, sweeping the floor and making beds and cooking meals. And the little gnomes or the dwarves are a representation of her inner work to go down under the earth, the cave, to gather the jewels and the gems and the treasures. And they're little, what I call, soul miners. And they go down and they bring the riches back up from the earth. And so they are a tremendous part of the story, showing the work of the soul as it, you know, gestates and sleeps and dreams and calls forward the treasures and the gems of the unconscious and the inner life to resurrect the wisdom and to resurrect the will, so that one may indeed go back out into the world and bring these treasures forward as gifts. And so, in Snow White, of course, there are 3 initiations. The wicked stepmother tries to kill Snow White 3 times while she's in the little cottage, the first time with a poisonous comb, the second time with a corset to strangle her so she can't breathe, and the third time is the candied apple. Now, the first 2 times, she did faint and drop down into unconsciousness because of the poison comb and the corset, but the dwarves were able to revive her. So she had the help of her, she had sort of the help of outside forces. There's always angelic helpers or birds or angels or that can assist the soul. But there comes a point, and this is the number 9 energy, when we must take that next step alone. It's a rebirth, it's a new beginning. And whenever there's a new beginning, a birth or a death, we have to do it by ourselves. And so there she has the apple stuck in her throat, and the gnomes, the dwarves, are unable to revive her. And of course, they put her in a crystal coffin, representing, of course, an aspect of the cave, an aspect of their work. And the handsome prince, in all fairy tales, represents the will, the animus. So through her own work of her inner dream world and the gestation work within, she calls to herself forward the will to free her, to awaken her so that she can begin her new life. And so, of course, the prince arrives, and as he lifts her, she coughs up the apple and, of course, opens her eyes and joyously falls in love with the prince and, of course, joyously rides away on a white horse to a castle with the little gnomes with their teary eyes and hinkies. And basically, it's leaving the old world behind and the work of her own will and the service that brought her to this point of a fulfilled destiny, which is ultimately the dream and the wish for every embodied soul, whether we know it or not.
Right.
So, do you have any questions on that?
You know, I think it's really interesting, because you definitely have the knowledge base of both the tarot and the ability to connect it in a way through the fairy tales that is really amazing.
Yeah, it's quite fun, as you can imagine. You know, as you start working with the cards and learning about that interconnection between the fairy tale and the tarot, it's really magical to work with your clients, because really the fairy tales are almost in our DNA, just like the tarot archetypes are.
Right.
And the timing of certain fairy tale themes showing up in people's lives and seeing it in a way that they would have never thought, you know, of looking at Cinderella or Snow White or the Three Little Pigs, it brings a kind of enchanting joy to the work of progress and transformation, and is also rich imagery for ourselves to, you know, to really merge with the miracle of awakening through this innocent lens, yet very powerful one, once we begin working with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the other challenging cards when it comes to the tarot is the Tower, and you have Rapunzel.
Right. And the Tower, of course, representing the lightning striking of the tower, representing the breaking of old myth, the breaking of old structure. Something has become limited in one's life when the Tower card shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no getting around that. And something other than one's own will may at times intrude as a means to, you know, to awaken.
Right.
So that's why it's also very common to see the Tower card show up during Uranus cycles in a person's astrological chart, during Uranus opposition between the age of 39 and 42, when people are going through a growth cycle. And everybody goes through this time in life, which we call a kind of mini life crisis, when, you know, if we know we need to grow, but we just can't do it, we know that we'll oftentimes get a little kick in the rear from the universe. And sometimes we get it in ways that are more kind of gentle wake-up calls, and some people get it pretty harshly, like a car accident or, you know, some kind of a life-changing event. This is often represented by the Tower as an intense wake-up call, and ultimately it sets us into a liberated mode of existence that we must break free from the limiting confines of the past, and believe that there, you know, eventually find ourselves in new territory, even though we may not have chosen it, but it often turns out to be ultimately a better place to be. And so with Rapunzel, you know, she, of course, is cursed. See, that's the other theme that I love so much about fairy tales, is that there is generally some kind of a curse or a spell that the fairy tale begins with.
Mm-hmm.
And the child or the protagonist must find their way through the curse and into the freedom of wholeness and goodness and love. And this is the journey also of humanity, in that we're born with karma. You know, we're for those of us who believe that however past lives work. I mean, no, I don't think anyone in human form, unless you're like some magical avatar who still may not have the answers, because just, you know, if we're embodied in human form, we're not positive how it all works on the other side. We can't see it. We're not supposed to. But we have inklings. We have understanding, and we have wisdom, and we have intuition. So somehow there's a thread or a stream of consciousness that follows us, or that we, in fact, are connected to, a fabric, a greater fabric. And in that process, there's a journey in each incarnation to free ourselves from the past karma or the past baggage or the karmic imprint of that which may have caused us to believe in fear or to believe in limitation or to believe in lack, whatever it might be. We're here again to liberate. Rapunzel and stories like Rapunzel, who have been cursed at an early age at birth because her parents stole basil from the enchantress's garden and brought it to the sick mother because she wasn't able to conceive a child. And so the father went to the enchantress's garden and picked the basil, the holy basil. She became pregnant, but the enchantress found the father and said, I will curse your child. I curse something, I don't remember the exact, but when she's 5 years old, the child will be mine. I mean, these are the kinds of things that, you know, happen in fairy tale. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, at that time, at the time that the curse was supposed to happen, the enchantress captures Rapunzel, and Rapunzel is put into the tower. And there she stays. At the, you know, with her long braid, which represents hair, represents the ego, and the long blonde braid represents the growing ego consciousness of the individual. And the enchantress must climb up the braid and give Rapunzel her food. And Rapunzel becomes a beautiful singer, and she sings, and she just is sort of trapped in the tower. Well, there comes a point. And, of course, the Tower card, being number 16, is the number of adolescence, when one grows up and is ready to become a young adult. And she, through her own will, again, calls to herself the prince. Mm-hmm. See, and when the prince comes in a fairy tale, that's when the will force has become alive. And we're ready to merge with our active life force, so that we can move forward, so that we can accomplish, so that we can take the next step forward, the will. So she calls forward her will, and the will comes in the form of the prince, and he falls in love with the anima, the side of himself as well, that is the creatress and the divine muse. And he climbs up her beautiful braid, and they're blissful at the top of the tower, and then he climbs down. Well, of course, the enchantress eventually has to find, she finds out about the prince, and when he is climbing up the braid, she cuts the braid, of course, and the prince falls into the brambles and is blinded. So temporarily, the will can't see where it needs to go. And that's what happens when the tower hits. So something magical has happened. This is the point of enchantment in this story. The ego consciousness of Rapunzel is cut free, and she is banished to the desert, and the tower is now empty. But there, and the prince crawls with bleeding eyes in the traditional Grimm fairy tale to find Rapunzel in the desert. And as she weeps, another important factor of fairy tale mysticism, our tears are magical. And as she weeps upon his bleeding eyes, her tears heal him, heal his eyes, and bring him sight. And Rapunzel and the prince give birth to twins in the desert, a girl and a boy. And so what you find then is through the experience of breaking free, but yet first is the, there's blinding and there's cutting of the hair and banished to the desert. And we feel those things when we go through the tower card.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, through our sorrow, through the work and the moisture of our soul, to water ourselves, you know, to water, to bring the water of the soul forward so that we can begin to water a new garden of life, so to speak. She gives birth to basically herself anew, which is the male and the female together. So now she's whole.
Wow. It's fascinating. I think we could spend hours on this.
Yeah. As I say to, sometimes in my classes, just let's get a little, you know, ringer just to shut me up. It's just so fun to talk about.
Oh, and it's fascinating. Okay, so what I also find interesting is that the last card, the world, you have made the Earth Child. And in the last card of the Minor Arcana, which is in your deck called the Earth Crystals, and I also like how you've changed the names of the court cards, but you've called the last card, which is usually the King of Earth or the King of Pentacles, the Guardian, and that is Gaia. So how do those two, they seem to relate to me?
They seem what? I'm sorry?
They seem to interrelate. They seem to be connected.
Yeah, right. That's an excellent point and good insight. Well, the World card is just such a fascinating card in traditional tarot. You know, it's, of course, connected to Saturn, which connects to Capricorn. And if we look at the top of the chart of the natural wheel of the horoscope, the Capricorn is at the midheaven at the top of the chart. And so we know that Capricorn Saturnian energy is apex. It's when we, it's a culmination of skill, freedom, form, everything, when we're basically able to perform and do our best. And Saturn gives us the focus and the discipline and the discernment and the potential for form, so that we may in fact have a vessel from which to offer our creative love and service to the world. So the World card is a kind of beautiful completion, really, of the goddess nature in everybody, the feminine. That's a whole other story as seen through the journey of the tarot, but what I will say is what's very important to see is that the woman is always dancing very happily in the center of the World card, and yet she is surrounded by the four fixed signs of the zodiac. So again, we're seeing the potential and the manifestation of freedom and form. The Earth Child was created because this is the inner child deck.
Right.
And because we know that if we're to really understand the true virtue of what inner child means, from what I've learned and gathered and come to believe, is that the inner child is really the treasure and the gift of creativity, talent, beauty, self-love that every human being is born with. But as the Grimm brothers spoke of, when they sought to collect the original essence of the fairy tales, it was as if they were in a field of broken glass. Mm. And there would be little sparkles here and there, but trying to piece it all together was very difficult. And the glass had been shattered. It was like seeking to put back together what was once an original treasure. Edward Bach, the teacher and the father of flower essences, uses this similar analogy by saying, you know, when we're born, our original beauty is there. But as we progress in life and work through the initiations and, of course, the different lessons, we begin to, if we were to look at ourselves in a mirror, we would see perhaps a shattered mirror, a sort of a vision of ourselves shattered, until we seek the opportunity to see our original truth, our original face. And this is what the inner child is. So when we reach the world card, the inner child's journey has come to a point of we would say, fulfillment, and ready to rebirth the original talents and beauty and gifts of self-love and gratitude and service, and bring it back to the world in a whole new way, because we're ready to stand in our empowerment, stand in our beauty, and stand in service and give that love to the world. And that's what that little baby holding the heart at it, you know, in its little hands, and moving it toward Earth once again. And so from there, in the Guardian of Crystals, which is, again, very similar to the World card, to me those two cards, the Guardian of Crystals to me is the lower, not the lower, but it's, you might say, the minor arcana, the minor energy of the World card. It's its kind of twin factor. But you see, the major arcana cards are the divine work of spirit and the greater mystery, and the minor arcana cards are the work of humanity. They're the numerical cards that show us how we must act and what we can do in our earthly life. The major arcana cards are a bit more archetypal.
Right.
So in the Guardian of Crystals, the Earth, in traditional tarot, that would be the King of Pentacles, you have the opportunity to hold the world, to be a guardian, to be an emissary of love, and to be a caretaker of the earth, and to know that you have your, and you have your calling to go forward and be, you might say, again, guardian of the earth. So we've reached a point of service, similar to the World card, but again, with a little bit of a different story.
Right. Really fascinating. Let's look at the minor arcana a little bit. Your wands cards are still wands, except, you know, instead of little sprigs of leaves coming out, you have butterflies and fairies, which is a lovely visualization.
Right. Yeah, we turned the wand suit into the magic wands. So they're represented by the fairy world and the Daedic world. Because, of course, the wands represent fire and the world of intuition, imagination, and art. So we have the magic wand. The traditional cup cards have been turned into the winged hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, because it's a water suit, represented by mermaids, mermen, and undersea world castles, etc. And then the swords have been turned to the swords of truth, and of course they're an air suit representing the mental faculties of communication and the mind, represented by the chivalry and the knights and the shining armor and the castles and the princess and everything having to do with again the knights in shining armor. And then we have the pentacles, which would be the earth suit connected to crystals. And they are represented by the gnomes and the earth workers and the little fairy folk who are most connected to the architecture of plant and earth magic.
Right. And then you did take the court cards, which are typically, you know, either the princess or the page, and you've turned that into the child.
Right.
You have the knight, or the prince, the knight is now the seeker. The
right.
Queen is the guide, and the king is the guardian. And I've noticed, other than, you know, with the crystals, your guardians are typically archangels.
Right.
So it's very interesting.
Well, we felt very strongly about the need for that the king serves as a kind of guardian, and we felt that the archangels were a beautiful representation of that guardianship. And it just so happens that there were four archangels that connected perfectly with earth, air, water, fire, and we couldn't resist putting them in there.
Although most people don't think of Gaia as an archangel, but that's a...
That's true.
Yeah.
We can make her one.
Oh, as well, she's, I think, more than that, but yes, yes.
Yeah.
And why the queen is a guide, that's very unique. Or any, even the knight is a seeker. I mean, how did you...
choose that?
Yeah.
Well, the page in traditional tarot is the receptive one. You know, it's the beginning of a journey toward mastery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we move from when we move from a 10 of a suit card to a court card. We're moving now toward the possibility of personal mastery in that suit. So the page is just beginning. So they're receptive and they listen, and there's a kind of innocence. And the pages are generally looking at us straight ahead, and often are with their eyes closed or they're meditating. So they're in a receptive mode, like a child.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the knight is always, well, not always, but in traditional tarot card decks, such as the Rider-Waite, are profiled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they're in motion. So the page receives the calling or receives the message, and the seeker or the knight takes it out into the world and begins to pursue the quest for mastery. And the queen is the wisdom factor. Mm. Again, if we look at the archetype of the empress and the emperor, remember the empress embodies the love and the wisdom and the creativity that must be united by the king in order for a perfect castle and a perfect kingdom to be manifested and for the love to prevail. And so the queen then is the guide. She guides the way. She's a teacher. She's wisdom. She's wise. And then with her wisdom and teaching, the guardian becomes, in a sense, the protector. Because when the queen and the king match perfectly, they merge their gifts, the anima and the animus, and they bring love and form together to create protection for others. So the guardian then becomes a kind of guardian angel to the world.
Right. Hence the archangels.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so last point before we go, because seriously, we could have spoken for hours on this. I find this really fascinating. Mm-hmm. You talk about ways of using the cards, and you already spoke a little bit about dream work, which is one of the ways, but you also talk about it as past life regression. I think it's a really interesting way of, you know, using the deck and the cards to assist one in understanding things in a clearer way.
Right. Yeah, you know, when we created the inner child cards, we were very fortunate to find a fantastic artist who was able to bring in a kind of impressionistic brush along with illustration to create, I believe, a kind of landscape of dream world color, and you still have the opportunity, you still have the advantage to create imagery out of things. And I share this because when I have several conferences that I've attended and have had the great fortune to meet many, many people working with these cards, they're now in 9 languages.
Hmm.
Other countries have taken the initiative to bring them into work with past life regression, working in centers of child abuse, and healing children through the imagery. They've been used by many, many therapists in, again, past life regression, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in making them initially, we hadn't really considered them as a tool that way. But I learned so much about what they're able to do with these cards, because they touch into, but not only the great color and the pictures and the imagery, but the childhood fabric, the memory mm-hmm. plate, you know, the original sort of essence of one's true self coming forward. It's just been such an honor and so exciting to see the many ways that people have accessed, you know, parts of the human psyche with the inner child cards.
Right. Wow. Well, what a joy this has been. And like I keep saying, I really think I could have talked for hours on this, because it's really one of my passions. I find it very interesting. Tell people how they can get a hold of you. And
thank you. Yeah, I have ishalearner.com. It's ishalearner.com. And that is the site that you can find my services. I am an international astrologer and a tarot reader, and also author and teacher, and many products on that website. And then I have Flower Blends. That's FlowerBlends, flowerblends.com is my Power Flower Healing Essence Company. You can contact me through those sites, and you can also reach me at area code 541-683-5907.
Great. Well, thank you again. It's been a great joy. I really enjoyed this evening and the discussion. I find it very fascinating. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for what you do in the world.
Mm. All right. We'll be
back.
Have a good night. You too.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next week.